Atlanta Life Radio Station, WALR, bringing you the best in talk radio.
It's up to me to be the very best I can be. And it's up to you.
Philadelphia, and welcome back from the holiday season to a brand new year of exciting and inspirational episodes for the Up to Me magazine show. Today we have a special history lesson for you as we talk with Mr. Mike Erickson, co-author of Upon Destiny Song and producer of Walking in Obedience, the Ole Madsen Story. I'm your host, Gabby G, and if this is the first time you're listening to our program, my mother used to call me Gabby Gale as a little girl because I was born with a gift of gab, a trait that both my husband and son can each attest to. But I say that's okay because I believe that one's greatest weakness is also one's greatest gift. So if you like to talk a lot like me, or you're just a great listener, please join me in my virtual Gabby G Cafe and be inspired along with me as I introduce to you each morning another fabulous guest to inspire and educate you. Each week, I will welcome our guest and invite you to join me in conversations on various topics that relate to our journeys in awakening and living in our life purpose. I'm blessed and humbled to be a part of this Christ-led team, and I do not take this opportunity to serve as your host for granted. Here at Up to Me magazine, we love to encourage and empower each other to be the best that we can be. So this program is truly meant to be a platform of voices to be heard and expressed in a safe and non-judgmental environment. In addition, we also love to support our local and regional communities and charitable nonprofit organizations. This week, we are supporting the David Library of the American Revolution in Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania. The David Library is a nonprofit educational institution whose mission is the collection and dissemination of information on the study of early American history from 1750 to 1800 and the support of related educational programs and scholarly research. To learn more about the David Library of the American Revolution or to make a donation, please visit their website at www.dlar.org and let them know you heard it here on our program. A special thank you to Blessed Love Gospel Reggae Band for creating our theme song, Wake Up. You can hear the song in its entirety at the close of our show, so don't forget to listen through the entire recording. If you want to join me in today's discussion, please call in now to get the on-air cue. The number is 347-324-5246 and press the number 1. That number again is 347-324-5246 and press the number 1. Well, you know, I really can't say why, even as a small child, that I've always been fascinated with history. During the summer breaks especially, I spent many days at the Kearney Parkville Public Library in Baltimore, checking out books, watching old film strips, and listening to book tapes on everything from our forefathers' foraging of our nations to our ancestors' treks across the Indian-infested plains to revolutionary and civil wars and human interest stories that reflected on both past and present modern-day journeys. Perhaps that's why I love being a radio host on this show so much, being able to just lend a platform to the incredible stories of others to educate and inspire us along our own personal paths. Who will remember you or me and our families when we have gone from the centuries? What legacy can we leave the world, and why is it important to do so? All these questions and thoughts have been both posed and answered by my wonderful guest this morning, and I brought him here to share with us his family's fascinating and incredible journey of faith, courage, strength, unbelievable hardship, and love. Mike Erickson has been a devout student of the Trail of the Handcart Pioneers since learning of his family's trek from Denmark to Utah in 1856. In the last 10 years, he has spoken in many programs and firesides across the country and has produced films and music related to the stories and events of the pioneers. His documentary, in conjunction with Groberg Films and Dream Chaser, Walking in Obedience, the Ole Madsen Story, and companion to his book, co-authored with Sage Stedman, Upon Destiny's Song, has been heralded as a historical masterpiece, and it is, and has been shown around the country, receiving acclamations and awards at film festivals and firesides. An accomplished classical guitarist, Mike has produced 4 musical albums to date and is currently playing with the band Cedar Breaks. He is passionate about music, writing, faith, and family. He also enjoys nature, tennis, yoga, and resides in Utah with his wife, Sherry. Together, they have 4 children and 8 grandchildren. Please help give me a very warm and virtual welcome to Mr. Mike Erickson. Good morning, Mike.
Oh, so happy to be on, Gail. And thank you to you and Atlanta Life Radio for listening to our message.
Oh, well, my goodness. We're just really blessed, and I'm so excited to have you here this morning. And thank you for getting up, because I know you're out in Utah, and is it Central Time there?
No, it's Mountain Time. It's 2 hours. It's like about 8.
2 hours.
8:06, yeah, right now.
In any case, it's early, and so we just want to thank you for being here. And, you know, yours is truly a riveting story, and you're also a very gifted writer. I set out to read your book, Upon Destiny's Song, over a weekend, and I finished it in 5 hours because I could not put it down. I couldn't put it down. And its companion film, The Ole Madsen Story, was equally engrossing to me. So I don't want to waste any more time, because I really want you to be able to talk about your family and help us to understand the importance of their journey. So go ahead and introduce your family's journey to our listeners, Mike.
I will. First, let me not take credit for hardly anything. I wrote the book with a really talented writer and Sage Stedman and the band Cedar Breaks. We're a group of writers, filmmakers, musicians, and I'm just fortunate to be surrounded by very, very talented people who care about the gospel and who care about, I think, things that are important in this day. I mean, they're centered around this really important message. And it started, for me, it started with finding out who I am. I had, as you read in the book, I had a person I really respect that lives up in Wyoming tell me that I needed to know who I was. And he called my great-great-grandfather a hero, and I thought he was a poor dirt farmer from Denmark that brought his family over here and just happened to get caught in a real bad storm and went through some real hardships. But I learned who heroes were, and I learned why we should care about those that came before and what it means to us. And I think in America especially, we've sort of forgotten who we are. And if you look on the internet today, and I don't want to get on soapbox here, but besides shopping, the two things that are most popular are pornography and family history. And one of them rips families apart, and the other one builds families. And we have so many people in this country that don't even know who their father is, let alone who their great-grandfather is or their family. And so when we learn about who we are, and it makes us want to tell it to the world. And my family came from Denmark. They were part of a group that came over and joined a handcart brigade. It was in 1856, and they were part of the Age of Enlightenment. They came for a number of reasons. It wasn't just for freedom of religion, even though that was a very important part. The other part was they wanted opportunity, and they saw. It was a time when literacy rate was rising real high. People were reading, they were understanding things, they're reading the Bible, and they realized that God just didn't speak to kings and queens and noblemen, and they saw in themselves that they could move forward. In my case, they heard a story about God talking to a farm boy, and it resonated in their hearts. And so they decided that they would be willing to have the courage to give up everything and travel 5,800 miles to a place called Zion.
And they just they didn't like get on a train and go fly across the United States to get to Utah.
I mean,
their journey is incredible to me.
Yeah, it was a harrowing journey they had. First, they lived on the island of Zealand in Denmark, and it was Ole Madsen, his wife Anna, and his four children. And I focused on Anna Marie, the 10-year-old daughter. For some reason, she spoke to me. So when we were writing the book and I was learning, and I had a lot of really great people that I work with here that are great historians and stuff. So I was able to learn all the intricate details of it. And so they left, they took a train to Copenhagen. They got on a steamboat. They went to Germany. Then they went to England and they left out of Liverpool. And most of them had never been a few miles from their home. And so they'd never been on a boat before, a big ship. And so they got seasick. They came and they came to Castle Garden in New York. And then they took a train as far as they could go, and then they built these handcart contraptions. When they originally came, a lot of the pioneers, they had wagon trains, and some of them still did, but these were very, very poor people that came over. And so Brigham Young devised an idea that they could just build these handcarts, throw 17.5 pounds each for each person in, and they could travel 1,300 miles across the plains. And a lot of times there was 10 handcart companies that came in starting in 1856, and eight of them did really well. They didn't have any more deaths or hardships than the rest of them, but there were two of them that it was tragic. And it constituted the greatest rescue in the history of America on the plains, and it was a great story, exactly contradictory to the daughter story.
One thing that's killed me was one of their daughters, Karen, who decided the last minute she didn't want to go because she was having a premonition about one of her aunts dying, and she felt like she needed to stay behind and help. Can you tell us a little bit about Karen?
I feel so bad for Karen because I've been searching for her for 15 years, me and my family and a number of other people. We haven't found her. We're actually, we've been to Denmark. We filmed in Denmark and traveled the whole trail. And Karen's part was, I think, one of the most saddest because she had to watch her family leave. And she got to the dock in Copenhagen, stayed overnight, and we verified this with the records of her going, having seen her crossed off the manifest and then going back. But she had a dream that her her mother's sister died, and she wouldn't get on the boat, and she went back to, and lived with her uncle and helped to train the children, helped him with his children. So, and then she's been lost to time. So we had one of the things, I'm not getting ahead of myself here, but we had a great Ole Madsen reunion where we found every cousin that we could find, and we went up to Wyoming where Ole Madsen died, and we had a reunion, and we tried in vain to find her, and we weren't able to. So we're still looking.
I just can't imagine being the parents, being your great grandfather, but she was of age. She was 18.
She was 18. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she was 18, so she was of age. You know, she's an adult. And it's much less our kids saying, you know, I don't want to go to the movies with you guys. You know, I mean, they're independent. You know, there's not much you can do to change your mind. I don't want to go on this trip with you. And my son does that. You know, if my husband and I want to go away for a weekend, we're at the beach here. He's like, I'm staying behind. But that's a weekend at the beach. You know, that's not, we don't know if we'll ever see you again. And so I can't imagine the pain of being able to allow their daughter Karen to make that decision for herself and for their family, knowing the separation and the pain of that and not knowing whatever happened to them. And but I wanted to say that they would get letters. Did they get letters from her sometimes?
Yeah, they we've never found one. We found that they communicated with their other kids. We found a couple of instances of that, and I'm sure they did, but we never found it. I think in leaving her, there was hopes that someday she would follow and come along, or there would obviously be communication, but it's right now it's lost to us. So maybe someday when it happens, I'll call you and let you know about it, because we're going to find her.
And that really is just one, to me, that's just really one of the I don't want to use the word tragedies, but there were a lot of tragedies, but that's just, to me, one of the most painful experiences that began their journey, because they did not know what was ahead of them. When I thought about where they were going, I thought that's going to put them in the middle of winter in like Nebraska or the Midwest, when in the mountains when it's freezing cold and all that snow. And that's indeed right. What they came across. And they're in there they're with their hand carts trying to pull those. And can you tell us a little bit about the journey once they hit the plains and all that they went through? Because not just to concentrate on the bad things, Mike, but I want people to understand the atrocities your ancestors went through just in order to have a better life. Because I don't know too many people today, if they'd have known ahead of time what they were going through or the unknown that way, they really trusted each other. They trusted the Lord. They relied on each other. The love and the strength and the courage for each other is amazing to me. And what they went through, and I want people to understand what they went through, because I think they'd appreciate the life that they have today, we have today. We think we have hardships. I've never seen hardship like this.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine. So,
the one thing that I was really impressed with is what you were talking about, and as I learned about it, I learned that that they really relied on the Lord. They gave credit to the Lord when something went really well, and when something didn't go really well, they looked to find out what they could do to make it better through him. And so they acknowledged his hand in their whole lives. And that's what I think drew them through. There was, in this journey, there was a lot of mistakes made. There was mistakes made by the leaders. There was mistakes made by people in the handcart company and things that happened to them. And I'll tell you about those in a minute. But at the end of the day, they didn't blame people. They just were thankful for their lives and were thankful for what they were given, even when they lost people. And there was about 1,000 people that started out on this journey in two handcart companies, and they would the drop off place was really Florence, and they there was 1,000 in the handcart companies, plus there was a couple of independent wagon trains that went along with them. They lost about 200 and some odd people, 220 people, something like that, in this journey. But at starting, I think it was always an adventure to them. There's always singing in the camp and moving along. But they left too late. They left too late from and they weren't expected when they got here. And so the hand carts weren't done. They had to work really hard to get them done. Most of the hand cart companies and wagon trains would try to leave in June. They left in August. The other three hand cart companies of that year left in July, actually. And so they made it all right. And I will tell you that in most years they probably could have made it through, because their troubles started in October. So the Willie Company, especially, which is what I'm mostly familiar with, I had the advantage of learning about this through one family. Most historians and stuff look at the whole group, but I focused on what happened to one family. As they left, about a month into the journey, they lost most of their draft oxen, so they were slowed down. And then in October, October the 19th, there was they were out of food, they were in trouble, and a great northern storm came down. And I was able to go, and working with Lee Groberg and Mark Goodman, I was able to go up there with my daughters and my family and be part of filming that reenactment. And I was just, it was 15 below zero and 50 mile an hour winds when I was up there, and that's what they had to go through. And the thing I learned about this was that if a rescue hadn't come, and I give credit to the leaders in Salt Lake and Brigham Young, who found out from some missionaries coming back that there was two more handcart companies on the plains. He got up in conference and he canceled his speech, and he said, "We're going to go take care of these people right now." And this is long before the storms hit, and so he sent hundreds of wagons up to, because he knew these people might be in trouble. So it was very, very prophetic in that sense. And they got caught in the storm, and none of them would have made it out alive without this rescue. And the thing that it brought home to me, and the thing that made it really important, was I started seeing parallels in my life. I saw parallels to my ancestors' struggles, and I saw parallels to this rescue especially. And I realized that none of us are going to make it out of this life without the rescue of a Savior. And so it was a direct parallel to that. And the rescue team found them. The rescuers found them just below South Pass, as they were, just destitute. And the book tells about how they found them and the troubles they were in. They were they stopped in Laramie to try to get some extra supplies in Fort Laramie. It was only one of three forts on the journey. There was Fort Kearney, Fort Laramie, and Fort Bridger before they got to Salt Lake, which was few and far between, but there was no supplies for them. And so when the storm hit, they were done. They were done without the rescue. So it's the greatest rescue, like I said, in the history of the American West.
And they had no shoes. A lot of them, their shoes wore out. They didn't have shoes. I can't imagine what was it? How many feet of snow? Was it?
Well,
or maybe
yeah,
it was like 12
was
feet?
A, yeah, 12 no, inches well, 12 inches, yeah. And it just depends on the day. It started, they had good weather till October 19th, and then they didn't make it till, the Willow Company anyway, didn't make it into Salt Lake till about November the 7th. So there was about 2 to 3 weeks of real hardship where it continually snowed. And they were snowbound at the time they were rescued. And the problem they had was they had to ascend South Pass through a place called Rocky Ridge. And that was really a Gethsemane for them. It was really a really tough thing to do. And when the rescue party found them, they had some food, and you got to realize that there was two handcart companies. So there was like 14 wagons, the first that found them. And so they sent most of the wagons forward and kept about four of them. But then they had to ascend Rocky Ridge.
Well, when they found them, in the book it describes that they could not believe the conditions that they found them in. They were gaunt. They were starving. You describe how your great-grandfather ran up to them just saying, bread, 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 because they were so hungry. They had nothing to eat, and they lost a lot of weight. And so he threw them an onion, and then he ran back so happy with this one onion that he shared with his entire family. And then after they ate it, they got sick because their body couldn't handle the food.
That's right. They were eating everything they had. They were eating the leather.
Their shoes. They were eating the leather on their shoes, chewing that. And also, the children that couldn't walk, they put them in the hand cart with the people who had been deceased. So they ride along with deceased members of the hand cart company because they couldn't bear them because the ground was frozen. So they had to put the kids sitting on top of the deceased bodies.
Well, that happened in a couple of instances, but they would usually bury them where they were, and that was very hard to do, and they'd usually try to heat up the ground with burn it and then heat it up to bury them. But the thing that was interesting to me is when I learned about the story, and it took about 10 years of research, and Sage and I spent 3 years writing the story, is I went to my oldest living relatives, and I asked them about the story. And one thing they always told me as I talked to them, they said that Ole died with his boots on, frozen to him. And I just thought everybody did, and I didn't think much of it. So finally, one time I stopped one of my aunts, and I said, why is it important? Her name is Aunt Ruth. I said, Aunt Ruth, why is that important? She was 100 years old. And she says, you don't understand. Ole gave up his food, and he carried his kids across streams. And so when he went up Rocky Ridge, he had to cross a couple of streams, and he got wet. And when I was up there and with my daughters and my wife especially, in reenacting that, I got a chance to walk across a frozen river. And I was able to – and it's in the film Lee Groberg originally did a film called Sweetwater Rescue for PBS, and then we did a version of that. Yeah, we did a version of that, which is the Ole Madsen story, Walking in Obedience, where We just let the handcart pioneers talk, so we just use their very words to describe what happened. But I remember walking across, and I went to Lee, and I asked him, I said, would you mind, because we put some boots underneath our clothes so the water wouldn't get through, some neoprenes, and I said, would you mind if I didn't put those on? And he said, that's fine. And just before I did that, he said, we're not going to let you do it. And I'm very thankful he didn't, because I think I would have died, because, like I said, it was 15 below when that happened.
Wow.
And so as I carried the first little girl across and went back to get another one, this happened two or three times, and I was absolutely exhausted and sweating. And when I would walk up on the other side of the bank, one time my pants had frozen and they'd fallen down, exposing the boots, and I'm glad they didn't get that on camera. But as soon as you stepped out, your clothes froze to you. And I was looking for the smallest little girl I could find every time I went back over there, because it was so excruciating. And I remember putting my head on a handcart and standing there, and I realized if I didn't get to the other side and get shelter immediately, I probably had 20 minutes to live, because the hypothermia that would set in. So it taught me what they really, really went through. And one more little story, if I could tell you. I was able to ride on a mule as one of the rescuers. And Lee Groberg said to us, you guys go out about a quarter mile and come in with the rescue wagons. And as I was on that mule riding away from the trailers and the hot chocolate and the wardrobe trailer and that sort of thing and the cameras, all I could see was the snow of South Pass, and I heard the wagon wheels slowly turning, and I realized there were people out there, and I realized that this rescue thing again, that there was absolutely no hope unless we had a rescue, and it really drove it home to me. And then Ole got his family past Rocky Ridge to a place called Rock Creek Hollow, and that's where he died. And they had to bury him with his boots on because they were frozen. And usually they would take him off and give him to someone else, but they couldn't get him off. So.
Right.
And I think
you
the pioneers
hear that in all the old Westerns, guy with his boots on. It's kind of an honor. I have so much respect for these. I don't want to keep saying these people. Your ancestors, they were your ancestors, and they became very real to me and personal to me. One of the things that just broke my heart was, and it's little things, like all the children, like they brought they could only bring one thing from home when they left because of the weight issue. And it had to be 17 pounds, so everybody could bring one precious thing from home. And by the time they're in the middle of this, even those became burdens, and they were forced to throw away the one thing they could bring from home that were getting them through these hardships. And the scene where Ole has to make his little girl, was it Anne?
Anne-Marie, yeah.
That whose doll? He had to throw away her doll, and she said, I'll carry it. He's like, it'll even become a burden for you to carry, and I can't hold it for you, because he knew she was little, and she'd be like, can you hold it? And so he said, if one person has to give up their book or, whatever it was, then you're going to have to give yours up too. I can't allow you to have yours, and then nobody else can have theirs. So,
yeah.
And he cried having to throw it away. I mean,
yeah. This book is very, very factual, everything in it. We spent a lot of time. We embellished that a little bit. But what happened was when they started the handcart journey, they were only allowed 17 pounds each, and they brought a lot of things from Denmark, and they had to leave them all. And then on the plains, when things got really rough and they lost their draft dogs, and they even left more, the handcart companies did. And we saw that, because if I was a parent and one child had to leave something, I think I would have them all leave what they had. So it was embellished
a little
bit.
You do.
But,
you have to. He was a good parent. Mm-hmm. but it hurt him to do it. And, you know, it's just like we can relate if you're a parent. That just hurt me. As a mom, it hurt me. You know, as a bystander, as a reader, it hurt me. It was just amazing story of everybody sacrificed something to get where they had to go, even the little children. And it's a beautiful story, knowing what they sacrifice, and they sacrifice their father, they sacrifice their moms, their dads, their, you know, their children died, babies were born. It's just amazing, this, and it's, and I don't want to give away too much, but because I want people to read the book or to watch the movie, it's just fascinating. But we're going to hold that thought because it's time for our short station break. So if you can just hold on for just one moment, we'll be back with Mike Erickson, and we'll hear more about why it's important for us to care about who we are and where we're going. So with that, we'll be right back.
It's up to me to be the very best I can be. And it's up to you to do the same thing too.
Hi, this is executive producer Mel D, and thank you for tuning in. We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new, uplifting, and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn Fields, Less Stuff, More Meaningful Life. An up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels. And there's so much more. So get your subscription today at up2memagazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
And we're back. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with author and producer Mike Erickson. If you would like to call in and make a comment or you have a question for Mike, please call 347-324-5246 and press the number 1. That's 347-324-5246 and press the number 1. Well, before the break, we were talking about Mike's ancestors and incredible journey from Denmark to Utah and how we came to know and appreciate them. And, you know, you have these websites, like Mike, you touched on that earlier. Ancestry.com is, I have been on Ancestry.com and found a lot about my own ancestry and where I came from. So tell us why it's important for us to find that leaf. Why is that exciting for people when they see, oh, I got a leaf, and wow, and a picture shows up, and you're like, wow, that's my great-grandfather, that's my great-grandmother, my uncle. Why do you think that speaks to us?
Well, I think we learn how who we are. I looked upon the ground where I stood and the right to choose. I thought, who gave it to me and at what cost? And I think this is a healing thing for our country, is to find out who we are. The cool thing about these stories is everyone has them in their family history. And when you start learning that, you'll start learning about family members that made really bad mistakes, and then you'll hear about how they rectified it. You'll find out who you are and why you're at where you are today. And there's this ripple effect. You learn that when you make a decision, that there's an effect that ripples down through generations of time. And you find out who your heroes are. A lot of times in the media and in our culture, we've forgotten who our heroes are. Heroes are the ones that sacrifice their time, get up and get us ready for school, or sacrifice time they could go golfing or fishing or whatever they want to do to come to a child's program and to spend more time with your family and that sort of thing. You make the world. Everybody's worried about changing the world or changing our country, but you change things starting at your home. That's where really progress is made. And this is what this journey said to me. Let me tell you, where it really hit home one time, I was watching TV just as Sage and I were writing the book, And there was a young lady on there that had just come to Utah, and she was saying to the news people, she was saying, "I'm so thankful for God. I'm so thankful for what I have. I'm so thankful to the people of Utah." And she was talking about being thankful, and she was from Katrina. She was from New Orleans. Her family had lost everything.
Oh.
They lost their home. And here she was on TV saying how thankful she was. And once I saw that, once I realized that, I understood why my ancestors never blamed the Lord. They never blamed Brigham Young or their leaders or anybody.
Oh.
They thanked God for what they had. And so I started seeing that sort of attitude permeate and these decisions that people made. One of the pioneers, when he started out the Road to Journal, he said, "We will gather experiences that will follow us into eternity," which is very prophetic for a little pioneer farmer to say, and to realize that the choices he would make would be part of his descendants' lives and who they are, and it's really powerful that way when you start to understand that.
Wouldn't he be amazed to know there was a film made about his story and all that they went through? And also, you know, he did what he did to save the lives of his family. He crossed that river with his children on his back, his wife as well, because he loved them, and he was trying to get them to the promised land of Zion, which was Utah. And that's the will. A person's will and strength comes from that love, which is incredible to me. And so he wasn't trying to make history. He was just trying to save his family. But look at the ripple effect of that.
And I think
love that.
The story transcends different faiths. Mm. It transcends races and political. It transcends everything and takes you right to home. And to me, that's what I learned. Who my heroes really were. When I found that out, I was just so indebted to them. Indebted to my, made me appreciate my wife more, and my children, and my friends, and those people that are willing to sacrifice. Sacrifice is it. I mean, taking care of each other is the way to make the world a better place by far.
And so I think that's why you talk about teaching the generations of that sacrifice, because every family has those stories of sacrifice. And I love how you point out in the book that you don't have to have a harrowing experience like your ancestors did to be a hero. And that our family, our grandchildren, your grandchildren will look to us someday as, you know, are we going to be the heroes for our families just in the everyday, getting up, making an honest living to put a roof over your head? You know, my dad, we had 10 children in my family. Actually, my mom and dad had 12, 6 boys and 6 girls. You know, my parents were children of the Depression, so there was no, you know, formal education beyond high school. My father, actually, the Depression hit when he was 14 years old. And so he had to quit school at 14 years old to help provide for his family. He was the youngest of 8 children. His sisters and brothers were married. They were grown. It was him and his mom and dad. And he had to stop being a kid at 14 and go to work and help provide and contribute to the family. So when I was his age, I wanted to get a job and work so I could make a little bit extra money. And my father said, "I don't want you to think I'm being mean." I was 15. And he said, "But I'm not going to sign that work release for you. Because of the Depression, I lost my childhood. When you're 18 and you're finished high school, you're going to have to go out and work." And he said, "I don't want you to have to. I just want you to be a kid as long as you can be a kid." And so I would babysit, and that was fine. He didn't care if I did that. But, you know, as far as going out and getting a job, he's like, please. So, like, I could tell that he felt a little bit of that pain from then. He's like, you know, one day I'm playing baseball on my baseball team, because he loved baseball, and the next man. And he wasn't resentful. He was grateful he could help. It wasn't that he was bitter or resentful, but he just wanted me to be a kid. And I look back at that now. He was so right. I had 3 years, you know, of time to be a kid and be carefree. And that was his wish for me, and I knew he was telling me that out of love for me, and from his own experience, he wanted me to just to be a kid as long as I could be a kid and not to have all those responsibilities, because he knew I'd have them the rest of my life after that. So to me, my father's a hero in many ways. He worked 2 and 3 jobs just to put a roof over our head. He was a carpenter as well, and he built the second floor to our house. We didn't have doors on our bedrooms for years just because they couldn't afford the lumber to put it on there, because it was a choice between putting a door up or food on the table. And they worked hard. I mean, we weren't poor. We were middle class. But that's, you know, they had to work 3 jobs. My mom, she's incredible. She never slept. You know, she made all our clothes. She scrubbed the walls. She made all our curtains. And she had 2, one for summer, one for winter. She made all our bedspreads. She made everything from scratch. She cleaned the house. She took care of the babies and toddlers. It's incredible. So they're in their 90s now.
Yeah, this is really cool. I can tell this really made you think about what's important and who your heroes are, and this ripple effect we've been talking about and the parallels to our own lives. I was going through some rough things with my family, and some things we had to get through. And as I learned about how other members of my family got through things, it helped me to get through mine. And the book has to do with the story of the handcart pioneers, but also has to do with my search for them and to understand who I was and how I fit into the world and that sort of thing. And the other thing I learned really, really fast is someday they'll look for me too. And as mundane and regular as my life seems most of the time, they'll hang on every word that we say, and they'll try to understand who they are and what put them in the place they're at. And so the fact that they'll look for you is really, it really puts a lot of, not pressure on us, but a lot of thought to what we do in our lives, you know. Because I was trying to find every little word that Anna Marie ever said, and in 50, 75 years, it's probably going to be true of me and you and all of us. I had a dream, a real quick story. I had a dream about my grandmother as part of this. And when I was little, I'd go to her house, and she would have candy and drinks for me, and a pop and stuff. And she would try to tell me these stories, but I never listened to her. I was there for the candy and that sort of thing. But when I started on this journey, I had a very vivid dream about her, and I walked into a room and she was sitting there since after she passed away. And when I was little, everybody called me Mickey, and she always called me Michael. And as I stepped in the room, for some reason, I thought back to when my grandfather died when I was 10 years old, her husband, and it scared us. I had 5 little kids, and we're sleeping downstairs one night. My mom tucked us in, and she was walking away, and we were all trying to figure out what death meant and that sort of thing. And my little brother Casey said, "Mom, what would you do if you saw Grandpa?" And the room got very, very quiet, and she turned around and she came and tucked him in. And her words were so inspired. She said, instead of saying some story about he's in heaven and that sort of thing, she just said, "I would give him a big hug." And I understood embracing my past, embracing my ancestors, embracing their choices, making a bigger family, telling my kids where they came from is so important. And if you think about the Savior, if you think about the Scriptures, that's the first thing he did, is he lived a life showing us how to live, and he told us where we came from, who our father was, and what we could obtain in life if we followed the way he wanted us to follow. And I think we tell that to our children. If you make these choices, you'll grow up to be like me. Or if you make these choices, you won't make the same mistakes I made, those sorts of things. And so as I walked in the room and saw my grandmother in the stream, I went to give her a big hug and I woke up. So it made me look at embracing that instead of maybe being afraid of it.
I like how you say, you pose those questions to me, in our conversations we feel that we kind of take things for granted, and we kind of can sometimes feel guilty about what we have when you look back and you see all the ways that they had to sacrifice so that we could have what we have today in our families.
Yep.
And are we going to be the ones that take?
Yeah, this is the great point, I think, of all this is I had a nephew that went on a mission to Brazil, and he had a companion down there that was working with him, and he looked at him and he said, "Why is it you were born in America in affluency and the gospel, and I was born in poverty in not a free country and didn't have all these things?" And the answer is that he had somebody that sacrificed for him and gave him this opportunity. And looking at his companion, the answer was, that's what you're doing right now. You're making these choices, these good choices in your life that'll create this ripple effect. And you're right, there's two issues Americans have, I think. Number one, we take things for granted. I do that too. We have so much.
Oh, sure, me too.
Yeah, and number two is we feel guilty about what we have when we look at the rest of the world and that sort of thing. But if you start thinking that we have what we have because someone made a sacrifice, and you're willing to make sacrifices moving down the line, and it blesses generations. So that's really the answer.
Yeah, and which ones are we? Are we the ones making the stand and sacrificing, or are we the ones that are the recipient on the blessings? And I think we're actually kind of on the both sides.
I think you need to be all three. Yeah. I think you need to be the one that makes the stand. I think you're the one that makes sacrifices to bless generations, and I think you're the one that received them. So I think you need to be all three every time you wake up in the morning.
I agree. Isn't that a wonderful way to approach life?
I hope this doesn't sound preachy, but I think it's by being aware a little bit, you move on. Yeah.
It's awareness. That's exactly right. And it just helps you to stop and think. And that's what Upon Destiny song and Walking in Obedience, Holy Madison Story did for me. It made me stop and think about all these deeper questions that we take for granted in life, and you don't really understand or why there's that pool. Because I love history. I don't understand why I love it. I always have been fascinated by it as a child. I always love reading biographies. My husband says, how come you always just want to watch biographies and true life stories? Because if it's fiction or nonfiction, I always just will put it back. It's not real. It's not true. He's like, why do you always have to have truth? Because he loves the opposite. He likes espionage and all those Tom Clancy books. And I'm like, I want to read, true life, because I think I learn so much from other people and their experiences. I feel like my life is boring compared to the lives of other people, and I learn so much from the lives of others. And so that's why I feel so blessed to do what I do here, is because I get to hear these stories and experience other people's lives and learn the lessons from those that came before me through other people. So I so appreciate your ancestors. I've come to know them and love them. And you know what I love at the end of the book? How you have all their pictures, because you come to know them and you wonder what they look like. And at the end of the book, you read, you can see their photos and what became of them afterwards. So it's just, I feel like it's a glance into your family Bible almost. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you.
And also I wanted to point out go ahead.
I was just going to say. I just was going to give you a note about why I've gone beyond the book and the movie to music and that sort of thing. I don't know if it's a good time to talk about that now, but I was classical guitar. I've studied classical guitar for years, and during this search for my ancestors, my oldest brother was driving down through Wyoming, not far from where these events took place, and he was a rocker in the 60s, and he had a song come into his mind, and he wrote it in his mind all the way home. He got home at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he woke his wife up and said, "You got to hear the song before I forget it." And she told him to drop dead, and so he went, because it was early in the morning. So he went in the other room, and he wrote a song called "Light Up the Land" that talks about these sorts of things. And then he called me and told me about it. Well, to make a long story short, the story of this song is told in the book, Upon Destiny Song, too. But this song became one of the theme songs for the Olympics in Salt Lake City. It was sung at the state capitol at the closing ceremonies for the dignitaries that were there. But it also was dedicated as a song of the rescue of the pioneers, which meant, I think, the most to us about this song. And then we've had some Native American tribes that have used it as their song. It was called "Light Up the Land," and And so it's had this kind of undercurrent in our culture out here. And so I got together with some artists, and we decided to tell the world about our culture and about these some of the things that we've learned. I think Utah is so diverse. We have every religion you can think of here. We have all the different cultures and races and that sort of thing. And I think for a lot of reasons, besides the beautiful country we have here, we've learned to adapt together and our cultures together. And so I formed a band called Cedar Breaks to tell that to the world. And we just released this song again, and it's called Light. And it talks about this ripple effect, one person making a stand. And fortunately, and I'm not saying this to be braggingly, it won best gospel song, it won best music video at the Hollywood Family Film Festival. It's played at Christian Film Festivals. Venetia, who you had on from the Narrow Way Film Festival in Philadelphia, played on hers. She asked for it to be on there, and she's, by the way, a wonderful person. But so we were very blessed and fortunate to have it play at all these festivals and our music and win all these awards. But our music is about, we decided to take it one step past the journey of pioneers and ancestors to try to figure out what the word home meant. And it sounds really simple right off the bat, but is home where you live? Is home where you came from God? Is home where you're going back when you go back to Him? And so we wrote a whole album called Time Aspects of Home. And so we study where home is. And that's how we've got our message out, because we're not a touring band, and we've been really blessed. In fact, for the young people too, we just won Best Rock Song in Utah Music Awards. But I'm not saying this to be braggingly, but I think the message is so strong about home and so strong about family. I think that's why it's being embraced around the country.
Right, because it resonates with people, because that's where we live. It's home. You're right. And home is a word that has a lot of meanings for a lot of different people, and it's kind of universal. So I think the Lord gave that to your brother for a reason, and that's why it won awards as well, because of that, and he knew that. And so, unfortunately, it's towards the end of our time, and I could talk with you for hours about this, and we have.
Well, I hope I presented this very humbly. I don't mean to be
not at all.
To push myself
absolutely.
Or my band forward. Yeah, okay.
Not at all. And it's okay to promote what you're doing, because it's blessing a lot of people. That's why I brought you on here. That's why we have our show, is to promote people's stories that can inspire other people along their own path. So it's, you know, absolutely it's not bragging at all, and you are humble, and it's perfectly fine to just tell your story, and that's all you're doing. And so we're embracing that, and we're celebrating that for you, and we just thank you so much. I really love the message commitment of the Cedar Breaks Band, and so I think it's so appropriate to end our show. So will you go ahead and recite that for us?
Yeah, we got together and talked about who we were and what our message needed to be to the world, and we wrote it down in a music documentary we did called Time Aspects of Home. And so we're all committed to this, but it goes like this. Do not trust your good intentions, for they are never enough. Trust your willingness to act, even in the face of challenges. Consider all those that came before, and know the you that is now, for today we change the world and leave behind a gift redeemable to those dearest to our hearts.
Amen. That's almost like a prayer. It's just so beautiful.
Well, thank
and,
you.
No, I appreciate you. I appreciate your ancestors. I appreciate your music and just who you are and who you embrace. And I just thank you for your time. To come on the show and inspire us through your work as a co-author of your book, Upon Destiny Song. We thank Sage Steadman for that as well. And the film, based on the book, Walking in Obedience to Ole Madsen's Story, also, it's a beautiful film. And
by the way,
it's
on YouTube, too. It's free, and people can just go watch it through upondestinysong.com or cedarbreaksband.com. Or just watch it on YouTube, yeah.
That's
awesome.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to
encourage everyone out there listening to this to do so. You'll be fascinated. So I'd just like to say a quick prayer, if you don't mind. Do you mind if I pray real quick with you? Just want to close out the segment, and I want to thank the Lord ahead of time for those who may be impacted by your books and your films. And well, Lord, we just thank you for the privilege you've given me to be able to showcase your gifts through the talents of Mike Erickson, Stage Stedman, the Cedar Breaks Band, and everyone involved in their projects. And I just want to ask your favor and blessings and protection upon them in their continued work for you. And we thank you most especially, Father, for our descendants that have gone before us, walking in obedience with perseverance, strength, courage, faith, and love that has made it possible for all of us to live the easier path that we enjoy today in our modern world. We're grateful for them, and we praise you, Father, for their service to us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Gail. Well, and thank you to the Atlanta Life radio station.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. And we'll talk again. I'd love for you to come back and tell us about your next project, too, if you'd like to do that. That would be great.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Well, if you'd like to learn more about Mike Erickson and his great-grandfather, Ole Madsen, or you would like to purchase his book, Upon Destiny's Song, and CD, Walking in Obedience, the Ole Madsen Story, you can visit his website at www.upondestinysong.com, which is www.upondestinysong.com. And then another S, ONG.com. Upon Destiny Song is available in both print and ebook formats. And just like Mike said, you can also just go to YouTube.com and download the Ole Madsen Story and watch it for yourself. To purchase the CD and music of the Cedar Breaks Band, go to www.cedarbreaksband.com, and that's CedarBreaksBand.com. On social media, you can follow Mike Erickson and the Cedar Breaks Band on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, respectively. The Up to Me Magazine show will be back next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. when my guest will be Miss Evelise Page, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Believe Big. Stay tuned as Evelise shares her incredible true story of faith and courage as she battled a late-stage diagnosis of colon cancer and lives today cancer-free. You will not want to miss her story of her own legacy that promotes awareness, hope, wisdom, and faith. So mark your calendars and meet me here at the Gabby G Cafe. And on behalf of Mel D and myself and the entire cast of Up to Me Radio, this is Gabby G saying take five this week and be inspired to ask yourself about your own Up to Me moment. Then come back and share it with us, because you know what? It's your life, your moment. It's up to you. Take us out, Mel D, with our fabulous theme song, Wake Up, by Blessed Love Gospel Reggae Band.
Up to me to be the very best I can be, and it's up to you to do the perfect too.
And let the life media here to share the love through little life experience. And let the life media
who just let no man hurt.
Peace, patience, goodness, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control.
no longer you may have me say, wake up, and live your life up full of purpose. So work it, cause you're worthy.
Yo, listen, black, white, and native man, we all come from Targaryen land. Whether you are African or whether you are Caucasian, no matter if you're from Japan or whether you are Hawaiian, we call in all our sons and daughters back again, again. And King of Kings rise on the throne and set this world on fire. Who Jah bless, let no man curse until my flesh expires. I am a king and she is a queen and he shall reign forever. Christ Almighty, we shall be one in Zion. Blessed Lord.
Wake up.